Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Tom, Jake, and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Ross.
Hour number three of Tom, Jake, and Stacy. Sorry about that little outburst at the end of the last segment.
George just was having a moment.
Oh, my goodness. My two dogs just went, look, they can go nuts at the drop of a hat. There's really no telling when or why it's going to happen. It just does. And I think so far, since we've been quarantined in our homes, I've handled that okay. But as I was talking, they went so crazy, I completely just lost my train of thought and forgot what I was saying. So we had to go to break. I apologize for that. Hopefully it doesn't happen again. Penelope's got a look in her eye like she may go nuts, but we'll try not to have that happen. Know Your Seahawks is what we do every day at 2 o'clock. Today is the Travis Homer edition. Little Travis Homer, who actually found a place in this offense at the end of last season. Let's hear about him. Know Your Seahawks.
This is Know Your Hawks. Tom, Jake, and Stacy's off-season profile.
Brought to you by DivorceLawyersForMen.com. Good lawyers doing good things for good men.
A deeper look at the 2020 Hawks roster.
Let's go!
Once again, an introduction to this game. I'm going to say game for anyone who doesn't know. Jake Heaps, when he was in the quarterback room with the Seahawks, said that he and Russell Wilson and all the other guys used to play this game basically to know the rest of your teammates. It was invented by Carl Tater Smith, who was then the quarterback's coach, Tater, to make sure that the guys knew who they were playing with. Not just their names, not just their jersey number and who they were targeting, but who they were as people, where they came from, what they excelled at, hometowns, career bests in college and the pros, really got to know these guys. So we've been doing this every single weekday, and each Friday or Thursday, we do a quiz where we recap the previous week's worth of players that we learned about. So we had Joey Hunt this Monday, Marquise Blair yesterday. Today, Know Your Seahawks continues with running back Travis Homer. Travis was born and raised in West Palm Beach, Florida. In his senior year at Oxbridge, he rushed for more than 1,300 yards and 13 touchdowns and became the school's first Power 5 conference signee when he committed to Miami. At Miami, he was a quiet leader. He wasn't incredibly talkative. He was someone who teammates described as having a business-like demeanor on the field and to the media, more of a silent assassin. That was a quote used in the Miami Herald. But he was also described as happy and energetic off of it, around people he knew, around groups of friends, maybe other players. He was much more maybe himself, just a really happy, chilled guy. His leadership, though, was evident to younger players. Among those were new Seahawks running back DJ Dallas, who also played at Miami with Travis Homer as a year younger than him. Then he was just an underclassman with the Canes. He told the Palm Beach Post that he looks up to Travis Homer like a big brother and has learned a lot from him. Homer didn't just pass down his knowledge of the game, but he also introduced Dallas and a couple other teammates to his love of anime, which, this is my favorite, DJ Dallas described as, quote, lit. It is pretty lit. About that love of anime, I just think it's a fun aside from Travis Homer. You always like finding out hobbies and interests that players have, especially if they're kind of unique. And I think that's relatively unique. He loves anime and video games. He told Seahawks.com that if he wasn't a football player, he'd probably want to be involved with video game design. Other anime fans in the NFL, I didn't know this, include Juju Smith-Schuster and Aaron Donald. Who knew? Travis finished with almost 2,000 career rushing yards at Miami, the 12th most in Miami history, ahead of your boy Frank Clark, Tom. He was the starting running back, but also a key contributor on special teams. And because of that, he was also the only offensive player to wear Miami's turnover chain. I've always wanted to wear that chain. I'll never get a chance. He was drafted in the sixth round by the Seahawks in 2019. Now, primarily his role was on special teams. I think personally he had a great camp. I remember Jake Heaps and myself talking about watching him in training camp. He seemed like a guy that was going 110%. Not only that, but he ditched all the sleeves on his uniform. And as someone who's a fan of Bill Belichick and his approach to sleeves, I only respect that. So Travis Homer was really an all-out effort guy. I think it was something that is easy to respect, especially when it's hot, 90 degrees outside. You don't have to try your hardest, but as a six-round pick, as a rookie, you do. You got to get out there and prove it, even though it's already assumed that their returning starter, Chris Carson, and first-round pick are going to get reps ahead of you. So have to respect it. Now, he didn't get a carry on offense until week 12, but before then, he did make a big play. And this cut right here, Curtis, it's a 29-yard run on a fake punt against the Vikings by Travis Homer.
Michael Dixon on to punt. Hughes is deep for Minnesota. Fake punt. It's coming near side. Running the football. He's down inside Minnesota territory. It was Travis Homer. A fake punt. Michael Dixon ran like he was going to chase a bad snap. It was a direct snap to the upback, Travis Homer, who goes 29 yards before he's knocked out of bounds on the near sideline.
There are two things I love in this world, Tom, more than almost anything else. One, mint chocolate ice cream. Two, fake punts. They're the best. Without fail. I love them. And Travis Homer knocked that one out of the park, metaphorically speaking, of course. Picked up 29 yards on that play. Yes. Yeah. Because fake punts, it's you're further away from the end zone, obviously, because otherwise you'd be going for a field goal. So it feels like more of a risk. Hypothetically, if you get a field goal blocked or intercepted or whatever happens, like, all right, nothing's more exciting than a fake punt. I mean, I know people might say, like, well, what about a 60-yard touchdown pass? What about winning a Super Bowl? No, it means nothing if you didn't do it with a fake punt. Anyways, he did, though, have his kind of first offensive action after week 12. In a game against Carolina, he had two attempts for 7 yards, so nothing extra spectacular, although they did start including him with some more kick returns. He had 14 yards there. He saw significantly more action in Seattle's final two regular season games of the year, and that's obviously because the team lost Chris Carson, Rashad Penny, and CJ Procise. They brought in Marshawn Lynch, as we all remember, and Marshawn Lynch, Travis Homer, kind of coupled up for their new running tandem. So in week 16, game 15, he had 5 carries for 16 yards, but maybe his best performance came in Seattle's regular season finale, which, yes, was a loss at home against the 49ers. We all remember it. It was a heartbreaker, but you got to give props to Travis Homer, who had 62 yards on 10 carries after really not playing much at all in the first two-thirds of the season. He continued that action into the playoffs, although Marshawn Lynch started getting a few more carries. Now he enters the year with a reunion with his former college teammate, DJ Dallas, as Seattle's newest running back that they're bringing in from the draft. And weirdly enough, they're kind of competing for that same kind of role in the rotation. Travis Homer is a guy that isn't going to be the bulldozer that Chris Carson is. He's just not the same type of build. He's not the same type of running back. That wasn't his production at Miami, and it's probably not going to be his production in Seattle. But he's a guy that's going to go out, and he's going to be a speedy guy, someone that can help on special teams, someone that can help maybe in third down situations, someone that can also be a receiver for you. Maybe he helps a little bit in pass protection. You make yourself a jack of all trades as that kind of running back, and that's the kind of role that he's going to be competing with DJ Dallas with. So it'll be a very interesting battle throughout training camp to see who finally gets that spot on the roster.
Know Your Seahawks is brought to you each day by DivorceLawyersForMen.com. Very well done, Stacey.
Thank you.
As much information as you're going to find anywhere in this country, maybe even the universe,
probably,
on Travis Homer. That was very well done.
That's right.
And you know what? Homer may not end up having the type of impact that your lead running back is going to have, mm-hmm. Chris Carson. I mean, I can say pretty much definitively that he won't. But if you look at the stats, like if you go to the stat page of any team ever, a good team, bad team, whatever, you always have that Travis Homer role, that second, third, even sometimes fourth running back who picks up like, 80 to 100 yards a year, whether it's one big game or just maybe, he gets 6-7 carries a year, something like that.
And he'll inevitably...
Travis Homer's, yeah.
Oh, I was going to say, he'll inevitably be the guy where like... Maybe the play-by-play guy initially calls him by the wrong name. Like, it's that one guy where he just breaks out and gets, like, a 40-yard touchdown, and people are like, wait, that's not Chris Carson. Who is that? It's him.
Yeah.
It's that guy.
especially on the fake punt.
Yeah.
Because that's not a running situation. Like, if Steve Rabel's up in the booth and it's a regular formation, he can look down and at least see a number.
Mm-hmm.
Homer's what, 25? I think he's 25. He can at least look down and see that and say, all right, Homer's in the game. Fake punt, it's like, whoa, catches you off guard. You don't know who's got the
ball.
Yeah,
it does. It's exhilarating.
But yeah, Travis, and he was thrust into a strange position at the end of the year.
Yeah.
He and Marshawn together, really. Didn't Marshawn really embrace him?
He did.
Like, as his buddy at the end of the year? Like,
yeah.
He was really impressed by him. His personality, his running style, the whole thing.
There's great audio.
Impressed Marshawn Lynch.
I know. There's great audio I can't find right now that is just Marshawn Lynch talking to him on the sideline. And it's like, imagine being a rookie. You came in, you haven't really played a huge role yet because you've got, like, at this point, three veterans in front of you, including CJ ProSize. And then all of a sudden, you're thrust into the limelight. It's the end of the season, and Marshawn Lynch, who you most certainly watched when you were in, like, junior high, all through high school, into college, comes in, and he's talking to you, trying to give you advice during a game. You're playing behind him. I mean, what a crazy moment for Travis Homer that must have been.
So he loves anime, and if he weren't a football player, he would like to design video games.
Are you
now,
checking
he's still
your
a young notes. Man.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, yeah, I want to make sure I got all this. He was also called a silent assassin by the Miami Herald.
Uh-huh.
That's good to know. Now, he's a young man who has options in life, and he may end up designing video games. If you weren't doing this job, what would you be doing?
Great question. I really like decorating houses. I would like to do, like, staging. For when people have homes, they need to stage things. Or if there was a job where someone was like, I only have, like, here's my house, but I only have, like, $500 to improve it. I'd be like, I can do this. I absolutely can turn this house around with $500. Like, trust me. Trust. It'll happen. I can work magic. It would be that, or it would be, let's see.
Anime.
Anime. I'm a huge anime fan. That's what they call me. Stacy, anime fan Ross. I hear it all throughout the hallways. What would you do, Tom?
I can't do anything else. I'm too
yes,
far
Yes, you can.
Gone.
That's not true. You can play guitar. You could be in a band.
Yeah, but... Okay, hold on. You can't... I can't start a band now.
Yeah, you can.
And, no, I can,
yes,
but I'm
can.
Not going to make a living doing it. No.
Tom...
I don't want to. I don't want to do that.
You and me can start a band. Forget this show. Let's leave it. I'll tell Salk on my way out the building. We'll start a band. You can play guitar. I can play bass clarinet. It's amazing. We can tour starting tomorrow.
Well, I'll give you that. That idea has not been done yet. So maybe there's something to that. Jake comes in tomorrow. He's like, where is it?
Where is everyone?
They're out on tour. Yeah, no, I'm too far gone. Like you know how they say once you go down the dark side, forever will it dominate your destiny? Like, I'm too far down the radio thing where I can do anything else now. It's dominating my destiny. It's just what I am. I can't do anything.
What did you want to do when you were little?
I wanted to be a bus driver.
What?
I did.
I love
school
it.
School bus driver.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, that's great.
I can't do that anymore either. No, I could probably do that.
I bet you
could. I don't want to, though. No, I don't want to do that anymore. All right, shall we get to some NFL headlines here? National Football League headlines?
Yes.
That transition wasn't as good as yesterday, by the way.
No, Curtis. That's okay. I still
like
it.
Wow.
Woo! I mean, if I'm being honest, Curtis, yesterday is pretty hard to top. You executed a perfect 10 with the transition from
stuck the landing.
Our first segment to the last. Yeah, it's just hard
like
to do that
9.
Again.
9.4 right there.
Mm-hmm.
Even the East German judge was crying.
Ooh.
Yeah.
All right, Stacey, we've been avoiding this story for 2 days, and I gotta say, when I see this type of thing go out, I throw my hands up in the air. I don't know what the heck my take is on this. I don't know what it should be. It's sad. And of course, I'm talking about DeSean Jackson, who posted on Instagram the other day. It was... If they were quotes, they were fake quotes, actually, from, am I even allowed to say his name?
Yeah, the you can say Hitler.
Supreme Chancellor. I can say Hitler. Okay. Yeah. Former Supreme Chancellor of Germany in the 30s and 40s. He was posting quotes from that guy. And they were pretty insensitive, anti-Semitic quotes. I doubt very much that DeSean Jackson knew what he was posting, and he's kind of said as much in his apology. But does that mean that he should be immediately forgiven and let off the hook for that?
No, I think that everything becomes a learning moment. I also just, like, as an aside, if he felt like, hey, I didn't realize the message on its face. I thought it was saying something else. If you see Adolf Hitler said, colon, stop, retreat, do not highlight, do not take a picture. Whatever it's going to be is going to be bad. It's going to be something you do not want to endorse. Like the most identifiable, everyone knows, like, villain of world history. At least one of them, everyone should know this. And so, yeah, it was just a bad move on so many levels. I think the important thing to do, though, and I think maybe what we're trying to be better at, we, the general, like, universal we, is to try to make things learning moments and to try to, you want accountability and you want to make sure that people who say and do bad things have some kind of consequence as a result. If it's something like this, then make it something where you learn, you have a conversation, you learn more about, I don't know, Jewish history or the Holocaust or whatever it is. Like, turn it into something where we can be better as a result of this.
He's getting a backlash, as he should.
Well, yeah, don't quote Hitler, even if it's a fake quote.
Right. I guess
pro tip.
I have to get this off my chest.
Yes.
And I'm just going to say it.
Okay.
And I'm not going to, like, die on the hill or anything, but I'm just going to say it. I'm going to compare backlashes.
Okay.
The backlash that DeSean Jackson is getting for this is not nearly the backlash that Drew Brees got when he decided he wasn't going to support Kaepernick for kneeling.
Interesting.
That is not good. Because what Brees was doing, in my opinion, was just, he was just expressing his belief. Like, we can have differing beliefs about the flag, about Black Lives Matter, about kneeling, whatever it is. And Brees was just like, yeah, you know what, I wouldn't do that. And that day, he got torched. And here's DeSean Jackson putting this stuff up, you know, this Nazi propaganda, whatever it was, up on Twitter. And it's like, oh, that's really bad. Let's see if he plays.
Yeah, we got to be.
That's just not right.
We got to be not okay with all bigotry. On the same side, like, you have to also, if like, this offends you, but then, like, I can't think of anyone who would fall into this category, but things that affect other groups don't. Like, we should all be bothered collectively by bigotry toward anyone. And so I do agree. Like, he needs to apologize. There needs to be more action there. And this is just, like, also a weird conspiracy thing that he was talking about. It's just a weird message. There's an underlying problem there that I feel like precedes DeSean Jackson. But yeah. There's an important conversation that needs to happen there for sure.
Yeah, and I didn't even quite understand the content of what he posted, and I don't really care to know. But now there's the question as to whether or not the Eagles should cut him or do this. I don't know what the answer is there. I mean, there is some precedent, by the way, with the Eagles for this. Remember about, God, was it maybe 6 years ago? Remember Riley Cooper, the old wide receiver, who's white, by the way?
Yeah.
He used the N-word on video at, like, a Kenny Chesney concert. The Eagles, now, he got reprimanded, but we were in different times 7 years ago. They did not cut him for that. So is that the precedent we go by? I mean, is it same, different?
I don't think it would have been
the same. I'm glad I'm not the one. Huh?
I think he could have been cut if that happened now.
If I agree. I think so, too. If it happened in 2020 as opposed to 2013 or whatever year it was. Ugly all around. Whenever it's that ugly, man, I don't have the answers.
I know.
I'm sorry.
It's gross.
Yeah. Titans GM wants to see Jadeveon Clowney in person before signing him. Well, good luck with that. Isn't that what everybody wants with Clowney? Isn't that like one of the big reasons why the Seahawks couldn't give him a bigger offer? I mean, the physical issue,
yeah.
I mean, giving a physical, is one of the biggest delayers of this Jadeveon Clowney saga. I mean, if I'm the Tennessee Titans or any other NFL team, yeah, sure, I want to see him.
I do wonder
where he live, by the way. South Carolina, is that where he is?
Houston.
If he were, Houston? Okay, because if he were nearby, like, say, the Texans, which we know he's not going there. He just came on. He just came from there. Maybe they'd be able to get him a physical, but you can't do that easily if it's a team that's so far away.
Yeah. I do wonder how soon he'll be able to do that, though, because you have to think that facilities are going to open before the 28th, which is the start of training camp. So are we thinking that now you can start to bring in free agents to your facilities for in-person physicals with your team doctors within the coming weeks here? I mean, if that's the case, I wonder if there's going to be more movement there from Clowney in August.
Do not know. Do you think he's going to end up with Seattle? Clayton is still holding on to that, by the way.
I think it's a possibility. I mean, it might just be that Clayton indicated at one point that Seattle might have made his best offer, the best offer for him. And it doesn't sound like that's on the table any longer, but that at one point they
right.
did. So,
but they could. I mean, it doesn't hurt for Clowney and his agent to come back to the Seahawks and ask, is that offer still on the table?
Mm-hmm.
They could say no, but they could say yes. They could mess around with him for a little bit, make him suffer,
what
make
offer?
Him grovel.
No.
Yeah, what are you talking about?
What?
We didn't give you an offer.
Wrong number.
One last quick one. The Ravens announced that their stadium capacity for this season, if fans are allowed to attend games, would be fewer than 14,000 seats per game. You know, when I was watching the inter-squad game the other day with the Yankees, I was looking at the seats behind the catcher. They don't show that many, but for as many as I could see, I was trying to determine, like, how many seat spaces would you need between every fan to constitute 6 feet or a safe COVID-approved distance?
I think it's doable. Like, if you have, it's a, 69,000-something person capacity at CenturyLink. So, hypothetically, yeah. You could fit that many people and keep your social distance, not 69,000, but, you know, 10 to 14 or whatever, and keep your social distancing guidelines. What I wonder is, like, what do you do in the moment? Fans get just as excited when stuff happens. What happens when a player runs to the end zone after a touchdown and people rush down to high-five them or take the ball? I mean, before every single game, you have people that crowd the entrance to the Seahawks locker room so that players can come out and sign things, like little kids and stuff. That's every single week that happens. There's like 50 people around there. So I just don't know how you enforce that throughout the course of a game. Like, how do you monitor a 70,000-person arena? And also, we've already heard that NFL owners approve for the lower levels of stadiums to be tarped off and used for sponsorship logos in a way to bring in more revenue without as many fans coming in. So does that mean that no matter what, you're sitting in higher sections? I'm curious to see how this is going to work.
If you're a season ticket holder on the 50-yard line, lower level, lower bowl, yeah, how does that work?
Right.
They kick you up to the mezzanine?
Yeah.
What do they do? 710-710 is brought to you by Vizzy Hard Seltzer. That is our text line. If you choose to join in the conversation, and many of you definitely have. Up next, we'll give you your Mariner Classic of the Night. Plus, I want to ask Stacey a little bit about how COVID is changing her job and how she will be covering the Seahawks. She may not even know, but I'm going to ask her anyway. 710 ESPN Seattle.
This is What's on Tap with Tom, Jake, and Stacey. Brought to you by Dietz and Watson. So, folks, what's on tap?
Your Mariner Classic du jour. Another Edgar. Is this Edgar week? Like, we had Kyle Seager week. I think it was last week. Is this Edgar week? All right, Edgar hits a late go-ahead grand slam. Oh, it's off Jeff Nelson, old Nelly, to help beat the Yankees in August of 2000. You know, Mike Sauk he made the point before that we don't talk that much about the 2001 team. We don't talk about the 2000 team, really, either.
No.
It's weird that in the limited amount of times that the Mariners have made the playoffs, we only seem to talk about 95. Like, we talk about 95 a lot.
Yeah.
2001, a little bit. 2000, rarely. And 97, never. Which was another year they made the playoffs, but then got ousted in the first round.
But do you think it's because 2001, year. Because that season, 95, yeah, you didn't make it all the way, but you still advanced, and you meanwhile won most games of any MLB team ever. But I wonder if it's like how we don't talk about the Seahawks in 2014. They made it to a Super Bowl, had a phenomenal season, but it's like, let's just all pretend that that didn't happen.
But we talk about the NFC Championship.
That's true.
But, I do anyway.
But how many people go back and rewatch? It's hard to watch that game and enjoy it as much because you know what's coming.
That's a fair point. That's a fair point. But I've had a lot of people hit me up on Twitter over the years when discussing that game, just saying, oh, it's the greatest game I was ever at, or my favorite game of the Carroll era. I mean, it's my favorite game of the Carroll era, even with the knowledge of what's coming. But yeah, I mean, in 97 with the Mariners, that's the only year, Curtis, correct me if I'm wrong, that's the only year that they had Edgar, A-Rod, and Griffey and went to the playoffs, right?
Yes. In 95, A-Rod was on the playoff roster, but he wasn't a contributor.
Right. He was, nobody knew who he was, really, other than a good prospect. But they had A-Rod, like good peak A-Rod in 97, along with Griffey. I mean, that team was Hall of Fame laden. And we don't talk about them at all. I find that strange. And then there's old Jeff Nelson, who just goes back and forth on the plane from Seattle to the Yankees. Back and forth he goes. All right, I wanted to ask you, Stacey, how do you suspect that COVID will affect the way the Seahawks get covered this year by the media? Because, look, there is Twitter. Players have Twitter. They can get their own news out there. I get that. But I still think that the national media, the local media, is still very necessary to get the stories out there that the players don't think to get out. And just to, you know, discuss football. That's kind of what it is. It's you put content out there, people read it, or they hear us or whatever, and they think about it. It's that simple. So how do you think that this year and the restrictions that might be placed upon you guys, how do you think that's going to go?
I mean, I don't know that the players are going to be like massively disappointed about it. What I would say, and this doesn't quite answer the question immediately, but I do want to say that I always see texts or tweets about the relationship between players and media members, that must be so antagonistic. And maybe if you're a national reporter and you feel like you're a player and you got misrepresented by that person, but overall, the reporters and TV folks and radio hosts who are at the VMAC, local media, most of them have a pretty good relationship with players because a lot of these players have known these men and women in the media and vice versa for years. Like, for instance, I hope he doesn't mind me calling him out, but John Boyle, who's wonderful, wonderful person, a wonderful writer. He writes for the Seahawks. I mean, I remember passing by in a locker room one time. I was when Deshaun Shedd was here for that second stint. And he they were like exchanging pictures of their kids, talking about, you know, like, oh, and then, you know, my daughter's this old now. And it's like you know these people. So I think that with those relationships come some really cool stories. You know, maybe it's not with every player, but there are some great writers that build great relationships with players and are able to tell stories about a season or about a player that you might not otherwise have access to. And so I do think you're going to miss that part of it. I think that personally, I am going to miss maybe being around other reporters. I don't know that we're going to be able to do that as much, but the media room at VMAC is relatively small. It's probably the size of our studio here, which obviously people listening also don't know the size of, but imagine like a large
10 by 15.
Yeah, like a large master bedroom, basically. I can't think that I have to think there's going to be like social distancing guidelines there, so maybe they won't have that open. I don't know. I mean, I think the biggest thing will be a lack of, I think, objective access. Having you know, people that don't have any incentive to make things in a positive light have access to a locker room and to a team. And I think that there's going to be a lack of some really fun, cool, awesome stories that I'm going to miss this year.
Do you think that locker room access, mm-hmm. and this could go for any sport, like I suppose, clubhouse access in baseball, if that's done away with now, and essentially it will be, do you think it'll ever come back?
I don't
or
know.
Or will they use that as an excuse to say? I mean, I've always thought that the best way to handle that, and I know maybe you might be asking the players. I mean, the players have to pick one or the other. You either let reporters in right after the game while everybody's showering and changing in there, and it's a little uncomfortable.
Well,
or just let me give you the mm-hmm. other option. Or you delay that. You let the players do their thing in comfort in their space, and then give reporters like 20 minutes in a separate room or something like that, where it's a little bit
kind of how they do it in college. Like they say, can you bring
Yeah, you're
in
not being
player?
As intrusive.
Yeah, I will say that there is, when you go down after the game, there's like sometimes 20 to 30 minutes that you're just kind of waiting around after the game ends before they let people in. So there are many guys that get a chance to shower. Like they do their own breakdown as a team where they talk about whatever. And so you aren't walking in the minute guys get off the field and they're looking to change. I feel like people often say like, why do you need to be in there? And it's like oftentimes going into a locker room, which first of all is giant. You aren't in people's space. Going into a locker room after guys have had the 20, 30 minutes, whatever, to decompress often still shapes my perception of how a game was. So I remember going into the locker room after the loss against Washington here when Seattle was favored. It was really disappointing. I think it was a poor performance by Russell Wilson. The mood in there was more frustrated and somber than it was, for instance, when they lost against the Cardinals in their 9-7 season, the final game when they didn't go to the playoffs. That felt like almost something where they were thinking like, we've accepted this needs to change, so we're not shocked. Whereas with Washington, the mood in the locker room felt like, what just happened? Those kinds of feelings that you have when you talk with players or you walk into a room, nothing is more awkward than walking into a locker room after a bad loss, not because guys are changing or whatever. It's because everyone's upset, and it's not fun to go up and ask someone what happened and for a player to have to relive a mistake or whatever. But sometimes being in there changes your perception of a game. I might otherwise think like, you know, man, that final loss of the season when they were 9-7 and missed the playoffs must have been really horrible, but it really was just a different kind of feeling in there.
Yeah, sometimes end of the season, at least we get to go home. Like you said, maybe they accepted their fate that year as the quality of their team, whereas I remember that loss to Washington. It was where they got burned on a couple of plays late. Maybe they felt like they had it and they let it get away. That's one that they should have had, and therefore it was more frustrating. Yeah, I mean, I can see how that would vary. Have you ever asked Russell Wilson, hey, Russ, why'd you throw that interception?
No, you also don't have access to certain players. Russell Wilson speaks after every single game. So if a guy during the regular season or games, if a player is speaking at the podium, you aren't able to talk to him in the locker room as just kind of a nicety. Like you don't want to make some guy take all these questions in the locker room and then go to the podium. So they're usually off limits. So Russell Wilson and Bobby Wagner are two guys where you don't really go up and ask them questions because they're going to go to the podium. And then usually like a star of the game will also be asked to go to the podium. So usually no one goes up to talk to Russell Wilson because in 20 minutes he's going to go speak to reporters.
You
I wouldn't ask him
Nas
that anyways.
Jones. You could go ask Nas Jones, like, hey, man, why weren't you in the game?
Yeah.
Again.
It is useful sometimes. Like, I still remember, if players were like, I hate when people are in here, I would understand it. I have otherwise little patience for people saying, like, you're a woman, you don't belong in a locker room, when it's like, well, first
that's
of all.
That's a different issue.
That's altogether. A different issue altogether. But I do think there have been some moments where I thought, wow, I learned a lot about the game and this player. Like Lydia Cruz and I were in there one time and we went up to talk to Dwayne Brown after a game. I think it was a loss. And I still remember to this day, like, his socks are bloody. He's cutting tape off of his hands. So you get a feeling of, like, how much of a toll a game takes on a guy, especially offensive linemen. And then beyond that, he was so patient with our questions because it's a loss and we're kind of like, oh, how do we ask them? And he was so wonderful. And that also changed my perception of him as a player, because you have to think, like, he's clearly a very patient leader and a patient person. So, yeah, I don't know. I find it incredibly useful.
We may have an update, a very vague one, but an update on the Washington name actually being changed. At least some limitations on what the name could be. We'll talk about that next. 710 ESPN Seattle.
That wait is over.
They're going away, baby.
It's time to sum it up with Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
Shot clock turned up.
The final word on everything that matters today in sports. Brought to you by Zone In CBD.
Step back!
I want to do a quick news item here that I want to explore a question about Patrick Mahomes. I'm reading this. Let's see. Well, two things, actually. Amazon is not going to carry Washington NFL franchise merchandise anymore either. So what are they, the third company in as many days, Stacey? We've seen it with Nike. We've seen it with Amazon. And, oh, Target also and Walmart.
Mm-hmm.
So those four. Yeah, so they've – oh, and Dick's, too. Oh, wow.
That's a lot.
Yeah, so it's Domino's, just like you said the other day. But with that in mind, the Washington NFL franchise evidently is thinking about reconsidering its name. The only thing is they're not going to have any sort of Native American imagery. Smart. Probably a good idea not to do that.
Well, yeah, I mean, imagine being like, hey, don't worry, guys, we fixed it. And it's still something that people are like, yeah, it's not a racial slur, but you're still appropriating things. You took a baby step. But I wonder if that then excludes, people were saying they could be warriors because they could use some of their alternate logos where it's like an arrow. I think it has feathers attached or whatever. So it sounds like that would be off the table then. So maybe they just go in a totally different direction.
They used that during the ill-fated Steve Spurrier era.
Who
they tried to bring him in and then rebrand the team, and they were just mediocre, and they went back to their old uniforms. But, look, if you're Dan Snyder and you've just stonewalled this thing for years on end and now you're finally coming around and you're thinking, all right, well, look, we're losing investors, we're losing partners, we can't sell any of our merchandise, maybe we should change it. You got to go all in on that. You got to go all in on that. You got to call your team the Kraken or something stupid like that.
No, you know what I mean? We're taking that. That's going to be the Seattle NHL team name. I'm ready for it. I made my pitch, 710sports.com. I make my case for the Seattle Kraken. You know I'm right. You know I'm right. Why do you want to be like other NHL teams? This is just an aside. I know we're talking about Washington, but Kraken's
all right. Hey, by the way, that reminds me of something. How do they decide whether or not to name the team after the state or the city?
What's named after the state?
I'll give you a couple examples. I'll give you a couple examples, okay?
Carolina.
And I'll even give you examples with sports that have multiple teams in one state.
Okay.
How about the Texas Rangers, right? And there's also the Houston Astros. The Minnesota Twins.
Mm.
The Angels, who are Los Angeles now, used to be called the California Angels for many, many years. So what's to stop us from calling our hockey team the Washington Kraken?
The tricky thing with Washington is that people always assume that it's Washington, D.C. I had an Italian professor when I was in college, and he straight up, like, he hated being here. You could just tell he was over it. And he just straight up told us that when he first accepted a job, he thought it was in Washington, D.C. and not Washington State. And I was like, thanks.
It's the capital. I remember when I was a kid and my grandparents had this puzzle of the United States with all the pieces were states, and I'd sit there and put it in, and every time I'd look at Washington State, I'd be like, where the heck is that? And does anybody actually
live there? I always wonder that. Like, I always wonder, people that grew up on the East Coast, I always get defensive when people say, oh, and then you got, you know, Seattle way out there. That's, you know, that's really tricky. That's probably why you don't get attention. And I always think, well, I mean, how is it any different from being in any other state? And then I remember that, no, when you're on the East Coast, you can go anywhere by train, you know, everything around you. And yeah, Washington really is that far away. I don't see national reporters in the locker room.
I saw a tweet from DeAndre Hopkins talking about how Patrick Mahomes is going to win all these Super Bowls. Is he worth his contract if
Mahomes?
He doesn't win another one? Mahomes,
ooh,
yeah.
Ooh, no. The point is you get to a Super Bowl.
Is he
Bowl.
Worth it?
I think he's good enough
to do it. Is he worth
it
if he wins one? One more, I mean.
Man, that's tough. That's tough.
I think he
one
is.
More in 10 years. You think he is?
I think he's worth it if he wins zero. Here's why.
Okay.
All you have to do for your team, keep them relevant. You stay good. Keep your team, like, on the map. Some years you go 8-8, others 10-6, but he's going to have plenty of 12-4 successful seasons in the same way Tom Brady has basically throughout his career. That's all you need to do to keep yourself and your team marketable. The Patriots didn't win the Super Bowl every single year. Even if they hadn't won six and they had only won, say, those first three, we still worshiped them the rest of the time because they're always just that dangerous week to week. Keep the Kansas City Chiefs in that conversation and he'll be worth it.
I agree. I do think, though, the onus feels on you when you're the quarterback. Like, no one's asking, is Mike Trout, well, maybe they are, but fewer people are asking, is Mike Trout worth his salary, which is guaranteed, unlike Mahomes, if the Angels never get to a World Series, because it's seen as something where it's Mike Trout can't do it by himself. So maybe unfairly,
yeah, exactly
people,
why.
Yeah. So maybe unfairly, people look at a quarterback and think like, "Well, we're paying you to get us there," and it's like, "There's 52 other guys here," you know. But knowing that, still, I have to think that it has to be good for at least one. At least one. He's only 24. He's got to be able to get back there. Tom Brady and Bill Belichick set the bar so unfairly high. If we're going to have Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes in that conversation, you got to get back there a couple times because they did it 9 times, I think. Moore would know.
How many times has Russell gotten back since he was Mahomes' age?
None.
I think it's none. I don't know how old he was that second time.
I was thinking
math,
that,
but
yeah.
Still.
I mean, none since 2014.
Yeah, it's been 6 years. If Mahomes goes 6 years from right now without even getting there, getting to a conference championship, the Chiefs going to be looking at that contract, or are they going to be happy?
No.
I still think they'll probably be pretty happy. All right, Jake rejoins us tomorrow. We're going to punish him. We're going to haze him tomorrow.
Let's do it.
Fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just disagree with everything he says. Be like, no, it's not true.
No one will know. Only the listeners will be in on it. We'll text in. No, Jake, you're wrong.
All right. Talk to you guys tomorrow, 710 ESPN Seattle.